Hello there and welcome. Today is Wednesday, June 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the U.S. lists China among the world's worst human trafficking offenders.
In part because it has not taken serious steps to end its own complicity in trafficking, including forced laborers from North Korea that are located in China.
The U.S. suspects Syria may be planning another chemical attack. Republicans postpone a vote on their health care bill amid more senators jumping ship. A new survey on how the rest of the world sees the U.S. and the story behind singer Katy Perry's latest single. It's all on today's International Edition. Well, U.S. Senate Republican leaders struggled Tuesday to keep alive their effort to dismantle the country's key health law, postponing a vote after an independent analysis concluded that 22 million people would lose their insurance coverage over the next decade if their proposed overhaul is adopted. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell told his Republican colleagues that he would delay the planned vote this week until after the week-long recess centered around the U.S. 4th of July national holiday.
We're going to continue the discussions within our conference on the differences that we have, that we're continuing to try to litigate. Consequently, we will not be on the bill this week, but we're still working toward getting at least 50 people in a comfortable place.
Democratic Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said Democrats would work with Republicans to improve the existing law if they abandon their effort to cut health care spending for the poor and curb taxes on the wealthy.
Many House members even said they only voted for the House bill because they said the Senate bill would make it better. CBO's report today makes clear that this bill is every bit as mean as the House bill.
Well, joining me now for more is Rick Mays, political science professor and co-coordinator of healthcare studies at the University of Richmond. Thanks for being with us. So why are Republicans having such a problem getting a bill they can all agree on?
I think it all starts with the fact that they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Their base is demanding, at a minimum, a repeal of Obamacare because it's been the great unifier of the party for 7 years. And what Republican leaders have said to date is, well, we don't have unified control. We don't control both chambers of Congress, and we don't have the presidency, even if we did, so we just can't pass it. And here they have unified control, and so their base isn't going to accept inaction or failure. So they're deathly afraid that the next time they go up for a primary election in their home state or home district, that they're going to get eliminated by someone who says, our senator, our House representative failed and lied to uphold their promise of repeal and then replace. So they're trying to keep that from happening. So they're trying to pass something. But now they're running into the opposite problem, which is there are real personal human consequences for what they're proposing. And they would be horrible for millions of people. And they don't want to face that reality either because that's horrible on a human level. And what they're looking for and they're desperately searching is some middle way that keeps them safe electorally in their next primary election, but they're also trying not to actually hurt people, and they just haven't found it yet.
Mitch McConnell almost sort of threatened the Republicans that if all else fails, that they will have to work with Democrats. But wouldn't you say that would be something the American people would actually want them to do?
It would be wonderful, and there's a lot of precedent for it. You have to go back a little further. It's not the most recent years you don't see a lot of it, although back in 2015, not long ago, Republicans and Democrats did, in a very bipartisan way, dramatically revamp and reform the way Medicare pays physicians starting in 2019, and they extended the Children's Health Insurance Program funding for another 2 years, and the vote was overwhelmingly bipartisan, and the deliberations are bipartisan. So it can be done, and there is precedent for it, and it's what they should be doing, and maybe it will take this complete partisan failure on the part of Republicans for them to throw their hands in the air and say, well, we're going to have to do what we abhor, but we're going to have to do something bipartisan.
Is it likely that somehow they will be able to round up some sort of compromise within the party to actually get this bill out there? Or do you think ultimately they will have to succumb and just fix the problems with the Affordable Care Act, or better known as Obamacare?
Good question. I don't know for sure. I think that Mitch McConnell, I would argue, is a better leader of his party than Paul Ryan is. He's more strategic and more analytical. And so it seems like he's failing right now, but he has given himself some more time. And I would not rule out the possibility that he finds a number of individually tailored ways of getting individuals to get to yes.
Well, it's interesting, too, because a lot of these senators have to go home now for the 4th of July holiday. They have to face their constituents. Many of them, it would seem that the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, is more popular than ever. People are worried. People are scared they're going to lose their health insurance. So this thing has gotten very political, but this is actually, you know, a big health care, a big part of our economy, a big part of every human being's life. So how do they reconcile this?
You know, I think what we're finding out is they don't know how to reconcile this. They literally have not found that third way, beautiful silver lining that satisfies their constituent base and allows them, you know, to replace Obamacare was something that's reasonably good. It might be very different, but it gets virtually the same number of people covered, maybe with less robust coverage or with slightly less financial assistance. If they had that kind of alternative, they would have rallied around it by now. Another thing that's worth noting to your listeners is the extent to which this healthcare debate, deliberation, drama has completely jammed and stuffed up the domestic policy agenda. I mean, at this point, Republicans were hoping to be working on tax reform and infrastructure and be done with whatever health care was going to be. And by not getting health care resolved, it's pushing back all the other domestic policy initiatives that they are far more interested in than in health care. Health care and the opposition to Obamacare has just been a very effective political rallying point for Republicans over the last several years. It's galvanized their base. It's motivated their supporters. It's given the party one thing they can really rally around. But now they're stuck. They're governing, and they're finding that it's so much harder to replace it with something that doesn't enrage and hurt millions of people. And they just haven't found it yet.
All right. Rick Mace, political science professor, co-coordinator of healthcare studies at the University of Richmond. Thanks for your perspective. The United States on Tuesday declared China as among the world's worst offenders in human trafficking and forced labor, placing it alongside countries the U.S. has long disparaged, including Iran, North Korea, and Syria. The annual U.S. State Department report downgraded China to its lowest Tier 3 rating, saying it hasn't met the minimum standards for the elimination of trafficking and is not making significant efforts to do so. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson explains the decision.
China was downgraded to Tier 3 status in this year's report, in part because it has not taken serious steps to end its own complicity in trafficking, including forced laborers from North Korea that are located in China.
Also, the president's daughter and senior advisor Ivanka Trump condemned China's practices.
This year's report emphasizes the responsibility all governments have to prosecute human traffickers. It also provides an opportunity for countries to see how others are fighting human trafficking and to adopt the most effective strategies and tactics while renewing their own resolve in the struggle.
VOA's Victor Beatty asks Human Rights Watch Asia Director Brad Adams why the U.S. decided to single out China.
Well, we don't really know. In fact, we don't know a lot about what decisions, about why the decisions were made by the State Department this year. There are some predictable decisions and some unpredictable ones. There's a lot of speculation about the China decision. Some of it has to do with the Trump administration's unhappiness with China generally over things like trade and North Korea. There's been a lot of commentary recently about President Trump being unhappy with China on North Korea. So it may be that things outside of the four corners of the TIP process were involved. You know, there have been longstanding concerns with trafficking in and out of China, the role of the Chinese authorities, their lack of action to try to limit the amount of trafficking in persons. And there is also just a trajectory that often leads countries into Tier 3 when they've run out of waivers. And that's, you know, one element here is that you can only be on Tier 2 watch list for so long before you are downgraded without a waiver. And clearly the State Department decided not to provide a waiver in the case of China.
Well, Brad, the report said China convicted fewer sex and labor traffickers in the 12 months ending March 31 that in the previous year forcibly repatriated, as you indicated, North Koreans without screening them for indicators of trafficking, handled most forced labor cases as administrative issues, not criminal prosecutions.
Yeah, which, all of which is true, but there's an element of judgment that comes into play with the tip report every year. You could read that paragraph you just read for many countries that are not in Tier 3. We're not unhappy that China's in Tier 3, but you asked if I could answer why they're in Tier 3, and it's not entirely clear to us at this point.
What impact might it have on U.S.-China relations that seem to be improving?
I'm not sure the U.S.-China relations are improving. I think they're very complicated. They zig and zag and have ups and downs. So I don't assume that the relationship is improving. And in fact, with the volatility of the Trump administration, it's very hard to say that the relationship is on a clear path in any particular direction. I think this could have a minor impact on the relationship. This will be an irritant to China. China does not want to be judged by any country. Of course, most countries don't. But China feels that it's a global superpower and therefore is beyond reproach. And you can see this in its behavior at the United Nations Human Rights Council, and its reaction to reports by groups like Human Rights Watch and others. They will simply say that they have everything under control. And if they don't, they're a developing country and they're doing their best, which, of course, is nonsense. They have a terrible, dismal human rights record. So, they will just see this as another attack. There are, of course, people inside China working diligently on problems of trafficking in persons, mostly in civil society, but there are people in government of good faith. And so, one would hope that this would energize them and make them feel like they have support for the arguments they're making internally.
All right, that's Human Rights Watch Asia Director Brad Adams. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. The U.S. sends fresh troops to Afghanistan as policy debate continues. A year after the Brexit vote, divisions in the British society begin to mirror those in the U.S. The Clinton campaign chairman testifies in the U.S. House Russia probe. And a high-level defector tells VOA that sanctions are taking a toll on the North Korea regime. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. The United States says it's detected potential preparations for a chemical attack at the Syria's Sharat airfield, which was used in April to launch a chemical attack that killed nearly 90 people. The Syrian activity involved specific aircraft in a specific hangar known to be associated with chemical weapons use, according to Pentagon officials. State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert.
As you all are aware, there are a lot of these things that will pop up sometimes that we just can't get into the details about this. But this has obviously gotten the attention of the United States government at the highest level.
Well, after the chemical weapons attack in April, the U.S. struck the airbase with dozens of Tomahawk cruise missiles. Analysis by the French government did find sarin gas was used. U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Nikki Haley told members of Congress Tuesday, the fight in Syria is now more complex due to the number of countries involved in the conflict. She said any further chemical attacks carried out by the Assad regime would be met with similar aggressiveness.
I believe that the goal is at this point not just to send Assad a message, but to send Russia and Iran a message that if this happens again, we are putting you on notice.
White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer said late Monday the United States had identified potential preparations for a chemical attack and warned that if Syrian forces carry out another attack like the one previously, they would pay a heavy price. You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA1, the voice of America.
I'm Victor Beatty. Since 1942, the Voice of America has been a consistently reliable and authoritative source of news. Today, VOA remains committed to providing an accurate, objective, and comprehensive news product at the top of every hour, every day. We can be heard on your local affiliate or streamed on the web at voanews.com.
VOA's International Edition continues now as we turn to the lighter side of news. Joining me for that is Rare.us content editor Nicole Moschella to talk more about the latest from Hollywood. Hey, Nicole, so let's start with Beyonce and Jay-Z. They just had twins born, unfortunately, prematurely. I know they were hospitalized for a bit. What's the latest there?
Beyonce did deliver a boy and a girl. They welcomed the twins on June 12th, and they were hospitalized for the first 2 weeks of their life. A family source said that the two were under the lights. That's a quote. And that led a lot of people to speculate that perhaps they had jaundice, because usually the light therapy helps reverse side effects from that. So they were under the doctor's care for the first 2 weeks of their lives, as they were premature babies. But they are home now, so it's very exciting. And Jay-Z and Beyonce, with their eldest daughter, Blue Ivy, are at home with the twins. They're staying in a $400,000 a month Malibu mansion. So it's pretty immaculate. It's gorgeous from what I've seen pictures of. But I think the number one thing is they're happy to be home and everybody's happy and healthy.
Excellent news, of course. We're happy to hear that. And I understand there's some rumors now Brad Pitt might have a new girlfriend since he's broken up with, it hasn't been that long since he and Angelina Jolie split up.
They broke up in September, and shortly after, in April of this year, he was romantically linked to actress Sienna Miller. The two of them had both worked on the film The Last City of Z, and Sienna's starring in it, and I believe Brad Pitt's a producer. And they were caught canoodling in April, supposedly, at a private dinner to celebrate the film. And Sienna Miller had shot down those rumors. She said, "I'm not dating him," and all of that right away. Well, again, over the weekend, they were seen at a music festival in England looking pretty cozy. I guess they were at a party hosted by Bradley Cooper, and things looked pretty hot. There are no pictures of it, though, so we are just kind of going off what people may or may not have seen while attending the festival, but I think they'd make a pretty good couple.
All right. Well, we'll hope for the best for them. Thanks so much, Rare.us content editor Nicole Moschella. Turning now to what's trending on social media, Andrew Palchewski is here. Hey, what's happening?
Lots to talk about at the White House press briefing room. Earlier, I spoke with our colleague Ira Melman about calls of fake news on social media after CNN had to retract a story that was proven false about Trump campaign links to a Russian investment bank. Well, at the White House press briefing on Tuesday, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who's the deputy White House press secretary, went after the media for fake news and called the Russia investigation a hoax. Hmm. And while she was in the midst of answering a question, a reporter named Brian Karam, he's a reporter from the Sentinel newspapers just outside of Washington, D.C., he has a fiery exchange where he says to Sarah Huckabee Sanders that reporters are just trying to do their job and they keep getting these claims of fake news that they have to face and not getting cooperation from the administration and how they're making it difficult to report when they're creating this contentious relationship. So all through Tuesday after that press briefing, hashtag press briefing was trending, Sarah Huckabee Sanders was trending as people reacted to this on social media. Lots of back and forth already spurred by the CNN story and these calls about fake news. Also, there was another story, Project Veritas, which does these kind of hidden camera videos, claimed to get a CNN producer on air saying the Russia story was just drummed up for ratings. So a lot of these media stories all kind of converging at once in the social media sphere, and a lot of back and forth, a lot of heated political arguments, not just in that White House press briefing room, but on social media channels as well.
Well, it seems like now more and more the media is these claims of fake news when they're just trying to do their jobs. So
yeah, and we're seeing that especially on social media. We're seeing a lot of targeted social media posts, tweets at the administration, at the president, talking about these fake news claims and media figures taking that role and fighting back. So it is an interesting new role that they're playing.
For sure. All right. Well, anything else going on?
Yes. A big milestone from Facebook. They have passed the 2 billion user mark. And that's billion with a B. Mark Zuckerberg posting on Facebook Tuesday. He said, "As of this morning, the Facebook community is now officially 2 billion people. We're making progress connecting the world. Now let's bring the world closer together. It's an honor to be on this journey with you. So quite a momentous occasion. It took them about a little less than 5 years to get from 1 billion to 2 billion. They hit 1 billion back in October 2012. But no signs of slowing for Facebook. They're the juggernaut globally for social media, and they've continued to be so. One thing we've seen is Zuckerberg responding to some of the comments that people were posting after he put up this post. And so somebody said, "You still have 5 billion to go. I trust you'll make it, Mark." And he said, "We have a long way to connect everyone, but we must do more than just connect. We must bring people closer together." Of course, that harkens back to the statement last week about Facebook's new mission to build communities around the world. And then this great stat, somebody commented and said, "As many people as there were alive in the world in 1927. So pretty amazing that we've gone in just about 90 years from that many people in the world to that many people in the world on Facebook. And here's what Zuckerberg had to say. He said, "One day, hopefully, we'll catch up with the present." So just because they've hit 2 billion and surpassed that, he's got his eyes on the prize. He wants to make it a global social network, and they are working their best to try to do that.
All right, Andrew. Thanks so much. You can follow him on Twitter at APAL. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. So could a new single be the latest indication of a feud between two prominent pop singers? VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins International Edition's Sarah Williams with the possible speculation.
We're talking about a brand new song from Katy Perry. But before we get to the story of the new song, I wanted to congratulate Katy Perry on doing something that no artist has done before her. In fact, only 14 songs in the history of the Recording Industry Association have sold over 10 million copies individually as single songs. Katy Perry's got three of the 14 now with her song Roar that has just achieved diamond status. So congratulations, Roar, Dark Horse, and Firework for Katy Perry are all diamond certified, which means they've sold over 10 million copies. She's had 21 singles in her career sell over a million copies, and three albums of hers have gone on to sell over a million copies. Now, she's just put out her fifth album, Witness, which is the number one album on the Billboard album charts right now. And today we're going to be checking out her brand new single from her brand new album. It's the third single from the album, and it's called Swish Swish.
A tiger, don't lose no sleep, don't need opinions from a shellfish or a sheep. Don't you come for me, no, not today. You're calculated, I got your number.
Well, now, Katy Perry, recently she was involved in the One Love concert in Manchester for the victims of that horrible bombing at the concert recently.
Yes, the event that was put on by Ariana Grande. They raised several million dollars. She is getting ready for her own individual world tour to promote her brand new album. So she's gearing up for that. A couple of weeks ago, you may have heard that she was on the internet doing a live stream, even showing her sleeping. There was like 40 cameras in this house, and she did her workouts in front of the world to see, and some 100 million people actually went online to watch Katy do her thing. The connection is, of course, the album's called Witness. This was a chance for us all to witness a day in the life of Katy Perry. Now, the new song that she's got out, which we just heard, Swish Swish, features Nicki Minaj. Katy and Nicki have something in common. They both have a feud going on. Nicki Minaj has a feud with an artist named Remy Ma. The two of them have exchanged their little jabs at one another. Katy Perry and Taylor Swift have a little thing going on. And this all started several years ago when Katy borrowed several of Taylor's backup dancers on a tour. Taylor was off, Katy was going on tour. So no harm, no foul. The backup dancers were planning to return to Taylor. She didn't like that. So she released a song called Bad Blood.
Oh.
And now there are those that believe this new song, Swish Swish, is Katy's retort to Taylor Swift. And Katy was recently asked about the feud, and she said she started it, and it's up to her to end it. She went on to say that she's put in a couple of calls to Taylor Swift, and they've gone unreturned. So she's made her effort. She's extended the olive branch, but no response from Taylor's camp. The lyrics of the song Swish Swish include, "Don't you come for me." A lot of people believe that Katy wrote that to Taylor Swift about Taylor Swift. So Katie explains her song as being an anti-bullying message. It's for anybody who's ever been bullied, pushed around, taken advantage of. This is a song for them. But she won't specifically say this is about Taylor Swift or for Taylor Swift. So, you know, the new song just came out. It's the third off the new album. So now we've got Swish Swish from Katy Perry.
Very interesting story behind that song.
Mm-hmm. Lots of interesting stuff going on behind the curtains.
Sounds like that. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossing.
Swish, swish, bish. Another one in the basket. Your game is tired, you should retire. You're bad as cute as an old coupon expired.
You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thank you so much for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zainab Abdul-Rahman. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The refugee situation in Uganda has reached crisis proportions, said U.S. Ambassador to Uganda Deborah Malik. In remarks to the Uganda Solidarity Summit on Refugees, she warned, to prevent a broader humanitarian disaster, the response of Ugandan authorities and the international community must address three interconnected issues. First, we must collectively meet the needs of the refugees themselves so they can live in safety and dignity. Second, we must address the needs of local hosting communities to support their resilience. Finally, we must stop the main driver of this refugee crisis, the ongoing conflict in South Sudan, that has displaced millions with hundreds of thousands seeking safety in Uganda. The U.S. government's participation in the summit reinforced the U.S. commitment to the 2016 New York Declaration for Refugees and Migrants, which demonstrated the unity of the international community in humanitarian efforts to save lives, protect rights, and share responsibility on a global scale. The United States, Ambassador Malik noted, is the single largest donor in the affected areas of Uganda. And as conditions have worsened, we have increased our contributions significantly. Since October 2016, the U.S. has provided nearly $154 million for humanitarian assistance, including $57.4 million announced by President Trump on May 24th, and the U.S. remains committed to providing such support. However, said Ambassador Malik, more resources and commitments from both the government of Uganda and the international community are needed. Ugandan authorities have demonstrated leadership in their treatment of refugees, but given the overwhelming numbers, they must begin to do more to protect this population. In particular, the Ugandan government needs to provide more security personnel in settlement areas where there are growing reports of violence, especially against women, she said. Finally, she emphasized there can be no beginning to a resolution of Uganda's refugee crisis without a lasting and durable political solution to the conflict in South Sudan. Neighboring countries and the international community cannot be expected to bear this burden indefinitely because of the unwillingness of the parties in South Sudan to end the violence. 4 million displaced South Sudanese people, including nearly a million living in Uganda today, deserve better.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.